Hi, I'm Katie Hill. Following years facing the fear on Blue Peter, 2 decades working on TV and radio, and years training and qualifying, I now work as a coach and speaker with Limitless, encouraging others to live all out. Because what's the point if you're not playing big? What's the point if you're not living your full potential? What if the one thing standing in your way is you? I'll be sharing my own tools and techniques from my coach training and life, plus inspiring interviews to help you live the life you were born to live. I'm Katie Hill, and this is the Limitless Podcast. Hey you, so today I'm talking all things Limitless with a guy I cannot wait for you to meet. I have been a fan since the start of the year. He's called Rob Moore, also known as the Disruptive Entrepreneur. Now the guy has 3 world records to his name. He's written 9 books, including a global bestseller you will totally have heard me talking about. It's Life Leverage. I'm a massive fan. He founded and co-owns the UK's largest property education business and over 750 properties. But that's not what's the most impressive about him, because all of this, after being £50,000 in debt and hitting rock bottom in his 20s. It's a massive story. It's super impressive how he turned his life around, and he's the most lovely guy. Now, as you'll hear, we were live to his followers across his platforms on Rob Moore Progressive, and I think you will find him as fascinating as I do. The guy has the most phenomenal life. He has the most incredible take on life, and it's full of tools and takeaways. It's a long one, so you might want to pause in the middle, but make sure you go right the way to the end. Enjoy. So, Mr. Rob Moore, the Disruptive Entrepreneur, so lovely to welcome you to the Limitless Podcast.
Thanks for having me on your show.
This is Disruptive meets Limitless, which I'm just loving. You have been on my radar since January, and I have the most wonderful friend slash work colleague called Nancy, who said, you have to check out this guy, Rob Moore. And I had a look, and I have been consuming your stuff ever since. And it told you everything about the level of respect that I have for you. The fact that this is the first interview that I have done on my podcast.
Thank you.
And it's you.
No pressure.
And I've interviewed some big people in my time. I've interviewed Will Smith, Madonna, but genuinely, hand on heart, coming to this interview today, I was more excited than I've ever been.
Oh, thank you.
For an interview, because I think there's something so special in what you are doing and in what you offer with your Disruptive Entrepreneur, with your Progressive Property, with all of it, which we'll come on to. And I do feel like there's quite a lot of life synergy with how we do life and do things. But just to explain to my listeners of the podcast right now, we're currently recording this in Rob's TV studio, and it's being live streamed to all his Facebook followers. There's a
and
lot
YouTube,
of them.
And LinkedIn.
And LinkedIn, hi. And so that's all going on. But for my listeners, I mean, I've been consuming your content since January, and you give so much to your audience for free. Like, how important is impact to you?
Very important. So my personal vision is to help as many people on the planet start and scale their business and get a better financial education. And any way I can do that, any social media platform I can do that, you know, collaborations like this, the way I can do that, writing books, doing my own podcasts, any way I can do that, I want to do that. And for me, giving content is a way to give back, because I retired officially when I was 27 financially. Then there was the recession of 08. Then I retired again at 32, then 35. So financially, whilst I have worked and I have continued to make money, I don't really need that so much anymore. And so when you've kind of ticked that box, I think there's more meaningful things to do, such as make a difference on the planet, encourage and inspire and educate, you know, people in less privileged positions than you. You know, it is hard starting a business. And someone can be really successful in another area of life, and it's still really hard to set up a business. It doesn't matter what experience you've got. I know many, you know, ex-sports stars and celebrities who actually found it just as hard as many of my clients setting up businesses. Also for me, it's personal therapy. So when you run a business like I do, and I've got many companies and we've got, you know, quite a big brand and reputation, things happen every day that get under your skin or upset you, or you feel a wrong, or you have challenges or conflict. And I'm the kind of guy that if I bottle it all in, that's bad for me. And
so it's like a volcano.
Exactly.
It's just going to go.
And I am a bit of a bottler. But what, I don't know if anyone else does bottle things in or avoids conflict, but what happens is it builds up and builds up and builds up. And in the end, you have that explosion.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want that in front of all my followers, or I wouldn't want to be critical of someone or have some kind of major fight online. So constant sharing of my content is that nice balance between helping and adding value to others and also me feeling valuable. You know, like if I retire at 27, 32. In fact, I think there are five different ways to retire, and I've done them all. One is asset, one is cash, one is based on your time, one is based on becoming strategic, not operational. And then the other one is to scale and systemize your business so it doesn't need you. So because I've retired so many times, I've figured all this out. There are actually five different types of retirements. But once you've done that and you've got nothing really left to do other than play golf and listen to records, your life doesn't feel very meaningful, even though you've achieved quite a lot. And, you know, retiring in your 20s and 30s is quite young.
Okay, so this is interesting because everybody who is currently watching on all your channels, they've got their bags packed, they're fully on the road bus, right?
No one's ever said it like that.
Everyone who's listening to my
get
podcast
on the rubber
is currently thinking, what the hell? This guy is clearly around 41, around 41, and he's talking about the fact that he retired young. So for my listeners, your journey to disruptive entrepreneur, the Rob that I see sat here today, is so inspiring. Without taking up the full hour, because I had to make myself notes because I knew we could talk for the next year. Can you rewind the story and can you just precis your story, your dad's pub, the pivotal moments, how you came to here?
Sure. So just to be really clear with my retirements, because some people won't believe me, they've been very mini and very short-lived, and I've got very bored and very frustrated and very itchy and very needy to do something very quickly. I when I wrote that book, I retired for basically, it ended up being about 18 months.
Right. After life leverage.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
In which you say the idea is not to retire.
Yeah.
Okay, but you did.
Yeah, well, for me, retirement, it's not about doing nothing.
Yeah.
It's about doing something else. And I think that's really important.
And full fulfillment.
And I've tried five times, so I get it. So it's not about doing nothing, it's about doing something else. But often my something else is writing another book, starting another company, you know, creating another venture, getting good reach on another social media platform, et cetera. Anyway, so I'm going to do this story in less than 5 minutes, so time me.
I'm actually going to.
Probably in the last 7 days, I've done this story eight times on the podcast I've been interviewing.
I mean,
but I want to do a different version.
You're going to do it in dance?
Different version.
You're about to stand up.
No one is ever getting me dancing.
Okay, just
so you're going to time me,
Yeah, hang on.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. Well, I mean, I've got to get into my screen first.
Yeah.
I'm already timing. Here we go.
So, in 5 minutes or less. So when I was about 6 years old, my dad got me working in his pub. My dad lived in pubs, bars, hotels, clubs, restaurants, all the way up until my mid-teens. And he would get me emptying the money in the pool table, emptying the money in the fruit machines, the pinball machines and the tills. And I loved it. And he would say to me, son, what was our take last night? And he'd make me feel like his business partner. And I just loved it. And all the way through, evenings, weekends, 6, 8, 10, 12 years old, I'm replenishing the shelves. We call it bottling up in the pub, counting all the money with my dad there, you know, looking up to my dad. Back then, do you remember that 10p pieces were really big?
Yeah,
because when you're...
Sort of do.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever, you're older than me. But when you're a kid, the 10p pieces feel like the size of your head.
And you used to get them sellotaped in a card from your auntie.
Yes, you did. Yeah, 10p, and you were really excited. And I mean, the £10 notes, they were like that big, these big brown £10 notes. Anyway, so I loved working for my dad, and he made me feel like an entrepreneur, not an employee. So that was my upbringing. Then teens all the way through to mid-20s, I got kind of stuck in the school system a little bit. Now, if you want to be a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, go to school, go to university, get a degree, do a postgrad. I'm not the guy that knocks uni. But if you want to be an entrepreneur in a company it's a bit disruptive or it isn't mainstream, I don't think uni is the way to go.
Well, especially then at school, they wouldn't have known what to do with you. They'd be like, whoa, buddy.
No, this guy doesn't do what he's told. That's a bad start. So I drifted. Of course, I had fun, you know, drinking and socializing and all that. But I left uni with a degree in a subject I had no interest in whatsoever. I stubbornly carried on just because I didn't want people to think I was a failure. And that taught me.
It was engineering, wasn't it?
It was architecture.
Yeah, and it was something visual.
Yeah, but that taught me, like, I should have given up in the first week because I hated it. Yeah. But I didn't give up because I didn't want these people who didn't know me to think I was a failure. But that taught me you've got to know what to give up on. Because, you know, people say never give up. Bad advice.
Bad advice.
I should have given up architecture in the first week. So you got to know what to give up on. Yeah. And I didn't. I was just like, never give up anything, never give up anything.
So what was that, 3 years?
That was three years. So I'm 22. I'm 22. I've built up 20, 30 grand's worth of debt by this time. My mum phones me up pretty much on the day of my graduation and says, Dad's not very well. Will you come back and work in the pub for a couple of months just to see us over? I said, yes. 3 years later, I'm still there. I'm getting paid £200 a week, which is obviously nothing. I'm working for my mum and dad. I'm reliant on my mum and dad. I'm living above my mum and dad's pub. We were all kind of pretending it was okay, but actually they knew it wasn't what I wanted to do. I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do, but I'm 25 years old and I don't know what I want to do with my life. I'm doing something I don't enjoy. I'm sort of feeling like I'm sponging on my parents. I've got no independence. Where was that entrepreneurial spirit and flair I had, you know, when I was 6, 8, 10 years old? How are we doing for time?
We're all right. We've got... honestly, every time.
Sorry, it's a good place to take a break.
I reckon
anyway.
We're about 4 minutes in. We've got about a minute. We got till.
We've got a minute and a half. All right. So, on December the 15th, 2005, in a really packed pub full of customers, like my dad didn't really have any friends outside of his customers at this point in his life. He was in his, 55, I think. No. Yeah, 55.
And a real grafter.
60. And a real grafter. I mean, he'd worked his whole life, 35 years, every birthday, every Christmas. He had virtually no days off. Him and mum grafted. I mean, the leisure, pub, hotel, club industry.
Anyway.
Dad gets up at 6 a.m., goes to bed at 1 a.m. every day. And at 1 o'clock on Sunday lunch, which was the busiest time, my dad had this massive nervous breakdown in front of all the customers, squealing. He was... His eyes were glazed over. It was like he was possessed. I managed to get him out the front of the pub and a police van pulled up. Two young officers. One guy was a kid. He must have been 19 years old. They approached him. I think they feel threatened and they beat him up.
Yeah. And you're standing watching that.
Yeah. Me, my mum and my sister are all outside. My mum and sister are bawling their eyes out and I'm just frozen. And that was the worst day of my life so far because I felt such shame and embarrassment and guilt and... out of control, a victim. I couldn't help him. I felt weak. I felt powerless. I felt like he'd given me every opportunity. He'd raised me to be an entrepreneur. He put me through good schools and helped me through university. And always, anything I ever needed, always look after me because he never had anything as a kid. He was brought up in a poor northern town. I felt shit. And for about a week, I did a lot of introspection and felt a lot of guilt and shame. And then finally decided that I've actually now got to do something with my life, but with a little bit more purpose and reason and quite a lot of pain. I went to a property networking event, met my business partner. We're still business partners today. He's upstairs. We co-own and manage 850 properties together.
Wow.
We've got two big developments we're doing right now, which we own fully outright between us. And that must be 140, 150 units. These are deca-million pound projects.
Yeah.
We have 4 or 5 companies. We do tens of millions of pounds a year in revenue. I've written 16 books, 17, 18 and 19 are coming out this year. I broke 2 world records. My podcast, you know, one of the most successful ones in the UK. Mm. I retired my mum and dad. They don't have to work again.
And your mum retired. Is your chef, isn't she? Or she's not anymore.
She was my chef.
Did she burn something?
No. She was my chef because I burned.
She was amazing.
She was my chef when I wrote that book. She was my chef for 2 or 3 years. But my sister's been really ill the last 18 months with a chronic kidney. Well, she actually just had it out 2 days ago. And she might be out of hospital today. But she was in intensive care 2 days ago. But I think she's going to be all right. But it's been a nightmare. Wow. So she actually retired from being my chef so she could look after my sister and her kids more. And my mum still works here, by the way, and loves it.
Yeah. You're a super tight family, which just comes through everything that I've consumed of yours, which is amazing. And you did do that in 5 minutes. But
yeah,
what I find fascinating with your story is I read a great quote which kind of sums up how I've looked at adversity in my life and others' life, which is adversity is the fuel of greatness. Like, yeah. Would you agree with that? That it takes for you to literally hit the rock bottom, that worst day that you described, and you're at choice. You either go and drink for the rest of your life, yeah, or you turn it around like you have. Like, yeah, how pivotal did that moment feel?
Looking back, it felt pivotal. And in the moment, I was really scared. So I agree with that to a point. Mm. So I think when you get to the lowest points in your life, you can either roll over and die and give up and feel like you've lost everything and give up. And, yeah. Or you can, you don't know how yet and you don't know what yet, but you know you need to do something with your life and you can start to turn it around. But you don't know when your lowest point in your life is until you look back.
Yeah.
So I do believe you can use pain as motivation, and I did, but at the time I didn't know it was going to be my lowest point. I'm glad it was my lowest point, because yeah, a lower point would be someone I love dying, and thankfully I haven't had that in the last 15
years. And when you did art, didn't you? Like, was that as a result of everything happening with your dad? Was that how you expressed everything in that time
period? I've always
been
into art.
Right.
So I'm going to come back to that in a moment. I just want to finish that, this, because this is a really important point. Mm. What I wouldn't want anyone to watch or who are watching and listening to think is, oh, well, you have to have had some real hardship in your life to be successful. Because yes, if you track successful people, there often is hardship.
Yeah.
You don't need it. You need to find your own motivation. Yeah. And that could be a really compelling vision. But, you know, that could be that, you know, you just want to be valuable and make a difference in the world. That could be because you've just got this really strong passion. Mm. You don't have to have the rags to riches story.
Yeah.
You've got to create your own story with what you've got. And don't wait.
Yeah.
For something shit like that to happen.
Yeah.
Use people like me, and but by the way, other people have had it a lot worse, but use people who have had trauma in their life, use their stories as motivation so that you don't have to wait until that point.
But if you do have trauma, like,
then you've
got
to use it.
And to not let it define you in a bad way.
It's a waste of trauma not to use it.
Like, I always look on it as, look what I freaking walked through and I'm still here.
Yeah.
Like, try stopping me
and
now.
That's the human story. That's the hero's journey. And that I watched the two-part Diana documentary that's on Netflix, and one of the saddest things I've ever seen on TV is those two young boys walking behind the hearse in front of the fucking world and the media.
How did that happen?
I know.
Like, and as a parent now, I just can't
just
even.
So horrible.
Yeah.
And you know, let's be fair, the media had a big part to play in Diana's death. You can't blame them, but they had a big part to play. But those two boys are doing something. They're men now, of course. You know, I admire them both. They've chosen different journeys. And one's had the bravery to step out, and one's had the bravery to stay in of the royal.
He's kind
circle.
Of got perks, that one.
Yeah, maybe.
It's kind of worth his while hanging around.
But imagine being in that situation.
Oh, it must golly.
You know, a lot of people look at it, oh, being in the royal family, wouldn't that be amazing? It's probably the most poison chalice you could ever think of.
Yeah.
So what I try and do in my life now is learn from other people's adversity and use that as fuel. I love watching documentaries and autobiographies because, what, you know, I just wouldn't want people to go, oh, well, I can't be successful because I haven't had,
totally,
you know, my lowest point moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to your next question, which was...
Well, I just wanted to touch on adversity because obviously for a lot of people, 2020 has been what's technically known as a bit of shit.
Yeah.
And what's, I think, fascinating with it is... I heard the other day someone saying that 2020 is going to go down in, you know, office lingo as the phrase you say for...
My friend Gerald Ratner.
Okay.
They call it doing a Ratner if you make a big gaffe.
There we are.
So they're going to have something so like, now it's, oh, that's a 2020.
Yeah, it's a bit woo and it's a bit way. Yeah. Your idea is a bit 2020. But for me, you were spectacularly instrumental in my lockdown experience. And I was chatting to my mate Nancy again at the beginning of lockdown. And...
Thank you, Nancy, by the way.
She's amazing. You'd love her. So I lockdown happened. Yeah. I'm a mum. I was homeschooling. I was juggling all the plates. And I, at the beginning, my instinct was to hunker down. Mm. And it was a little bit like, let's lock the front doors, draw bridge up, as they say. And this is my family unit. And this is what I'm doing. And we're just doing this. And Nancy led me to your video that you did, which I'm sure a lot of people watching this saw at the start of lockdown, where you were like, do not hunker down. Essentially, you were like, this is the moment to step up. Mm. And because of you, my lockdown completely reframed, and I launched my podcast, I launched my letter, and an online course.
Yeah.
How was your lockdown experience, and what are your big learns from it?
Yeah. So one of my mentors taught me, no event, no person, nothing that comes to, in your life has all upside or all downside.
Yeah.
It has equally balanced upside and downside. And he'd been drumming that into my ear for many, many years. And I've been listening to all of his books and podcasts, and I always reminded myself of that. Because normally in a situation, if we're feeling good, we're seeing and perceiving more upside than downside. And if we're feeling bad, we're perceiving more downside than upside. I went through a recession in 2007 and 8, and I was quite young in business. But I remember all the quotes, observe the masses, do the opposite. Be greedy when others are fearful, and fearful when others are greedy. And these are things I've read in books, and they rung in my ear. But they don't really mean anything until you can actually implement them. Mm. So in a weird way, when the last recession happened, I was like, oh, this is when you observe the masses and do the opposite.
Okay.
This is when you are greedy when others are fearful, and fearful when others are greedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not saying it was easy, but Mark and I knuckled down. And we figured out a way to buy really cheap houses, get higher yields, and we turned the recession into one of the best buying times we've ever had. Fast forward to now when the lockdown happened and the whole world is only seeing downside.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. I'm a bit of a rebel and a contrarian thinker.
Yeah, I see that.
Anyway.
I mean, when I watched that video, I honestly thought he's had too much sun.
Like,
it was a little
I'm
bit
a ginger.
Like,
yeah, 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 yeah. So for me, the lockdown was, by the way, being opportune. Taking opportunity is not being opportunistic.
Yeah.
You know, there were deaths. There
yeah.
were
trauma. And it's also
there were
not
trauma.
Negating what the world was going through.
Exactly. So
yeah.
it's not dishonouring
yeah.
the reality. But you can either buy into all that negativity or yeah. you can choose to create your own story.
Because the negative's happening, whatever.
Yeah, you can't control that.
You're either absorbed by it yeah. or you just go, okay, what's happening over here?
Yeah, you can control your life.
Yeah.
You can't control the economy. But you can control your economy.
Yeah.
You can't control the media, but you can unfollow all the noise on
yes.
social media and control your media.
Yeah.
So this is the versus your. So I just thought, okay, I need to control my yours. So we redesigned our business model. We went from creating one online course a year to one online course a week.
Yeah.
We actually had to come to the office and let 12 staff go. We had, at the time, 95. And I've never had to do that.
Yeah, that's
And
awful.
It was hard,
yeah.
but it had to be done.
Yeah.
And I was proud that I had the strength to do that. Then the furloughing came in, which is a bit of a blessing. And then we were able to give them all their jobs back. And we furloughed a lot of our staff. We got the overheads down by about 3/5. And our profit margins are up 300%.
And personal learnings from lockdown?
What have you seen
about yourself?
Where do you stop? I mean, by the way, lockdown has been brilliant for our business. It's been brilliant for our brand.
It was good for your beard.
It's been good for my beard, yeah. I
grew
my hair back.
Proper bushing.
Yeah, yeah. But it's had equal downsides.
Yeah.
It took its toll on me because I worked really hard in the first few weeks. What are my lessons from the lockdown then? Observe the masses, do the opposite. Be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful.
Go to a few more parties?
You could. I'm not.
No, you're not a party man.
No,
I was just trying
I'm
to push
boring.
You into that
yeah,
uncomfort
yeah,
zone
I'm
there.
Boring.
Stop
I'm boring.
Yeah. It's knowing what you like. My husband, if we're going to a party, he literally hates me that night.
Really?
So we don't go either. We're
yeah.
boring as well.
So I've not told anyone this story publicly, and I won't go into details, but I've probably only been to one party in the last 5 years, and it was Kevin Clifton's birthday party.
Oh, well, if you're going to go to a party.
Yeah, well, he's a good
come
mate.
On, Kev.
He's a good mate of mine.
Yeah.
And he's been sort of manoeuvring to introduce me to Russell Brand, who's a good mate of his.
Yeah.
There's a good chance that he'll be on my podcast and some things will happen there. And I met him and we were chatting to him. And I don't know if I'd eaten something dodgy, but within being there for 20 minutes, I spent the next 2 hours on the toilet.
In the Foxtrot.
I don't want to be graphic, but whatever I had cleaned
what
me
is
out.
The chance?
And that, yeah, and that's the only part. So I'm not going to a party.
The one
ever
night
again.
You could have got your dance on.
Yeah.
Oh, no
yeah.
good. Right, we're going to
so
get
sorry,
on to
Russell.
Books.
That's why I kept running away
sorry,
from
Russell.
You.
Sorry, Russell. So,
I'm fully aware you
yeah.
asked a question which I didn't answer. It was the one. You asked it, but and then I went back to the adversity one. Does that matter, or we just
no? We'll
all
just
right, cool.
we'll soldier yeah, on because life is happening.
Yes,
and
is.
We don't look back. We
lessons
just go
from
forwards.
The lockdown. Lessons
yes.
from the lockdown.
Yeah,
there is.
I guess a person.
There is always an opportunity. You just have to find it. And to find an opportunity, you have to not listen to the mass hysteria. You have to inoculate yourself from the fear.
Yeah.
And you have to actually look, okay, what's the new problem? Where do I create the new solution?
Yeah.
Where are my new customers, my future customers? You know, you decided actually maybe the lockdown's a great opportunity to do my podcast when everyone else was going, I think I'll put my podcast on hold.
Well, it was just time that I was at home.
Yeah, well,
suddenly
there you go.
It's like, well, hang on, you always say it's you haven't got enough time.
It's leveraging the upside opportunity.
Oh.
Okay, homeschooling,
yeah.
Difficult.
Yeah.
But time at home,
yeah.
Time online. So we've been planning to go global for many years, but the UK was doing so well, we never really pushed it.
Mm.
And since the lockdown, we've created probably 12 online programs, which are globally reachable, scalable.
It's amazing. And what one thing you didn't say in your 5-minute recap on your life, which I'm going to say for my listeners to this podcast, because when you hear Rob talking now, and it's interesting, when I first started consuming your content, sometimes I was like, oh, there's a lot of talk of money, which is amazing because you make a lot of money. But what my listeners might not know is that at one point you were 50 grand in debt.
Yeah.
So to turn that around to where you are now and to just start things and make them work is incredible, which I want to lead on to your books now, because the first one I consumed was Start Now, Get Perfect Later, which I adored as a grade A student of a woman who, not a grade A in a show-offy way, grade A student in that I need to get all my ducks in a row before I launch something. And all the way through my podcast journey, I literally kept saying that in my head.
Yeah.
Because I think you also said something like started is done is better than perfect.
Yes, that's it.
It's like just get on with it and just do it. Because what we do is put so many blockers up and momentum blockers. We go, da, 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 I've got to do all of that. Therefore, I'll do none of it and go and have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
So this book was absolutely incredible. And it's a brilliant read for anyone who is procrastinating, anyone who has, like, you know, the fear of failure, grade A student. Mm. This one, Life Leverage, you can see how thumbed my version is. I love this book.
Thank you.
Love this book. So this philosophy, elements of it for me were completely new concept. Can you just kind of touch on your Life Leverage philosophy?
Yes. All right. I'll get to that.
Oh, here we go.
So no, there's an important part I didn't finish, because I said I was about 20 grand in debt by the time I was 22. That got to 50 grand in debt by 25.
Yeah.
Some people think that, you know, this debt situation is caused by one or two big bad decisions. No, be careful.
Yeah.
Debt can creep up on you.
Oh my gosh. It's like, it's one crazy Christmas of we'll put it on the card.
Or just every month spending a few hundred quid more than you earn.
Yeah.
And over a 7-year period, bang, and debt compounds.
Yeah. You didn't go on a crazy shopping
No,
spree.
I didn't. No. I mean, I didn't manage my money very well,
yeah.
But I was just a bit loose with my money. I managed to get rid of that debt, and I became a millionaire between age 30 and 31. So,
and that was your massive goal, and then it just like rocketed, didn't it?
You say there's a lot of reference to money in my books, and there is. Here's the irony. As soon as I became a millionaire, I kind of like didn't really care anymore about being a millionaire, because I was one. It was just a goal. And a lot of people judge money. I thought about money, obsessed about money way more when I didn't have any.
Yeah, totally. And it's only because we're British.
Yes.
And people generally don't talk about this
stuff.
And what I admire is how out there you are with, it's just money.
This is what I earn.
It's just money.
You know, some people want to get message more out about mental health. Some people more about, you know, our sexuality, our gender, and all these important points in our life that we can be very confused about. Money's the same. How's it any different?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about those things, gender, sexuality, money is as common in our life.
Yeah.
In everything you do all day, every day, money is the enabler or the disabler. It is the exaggerator. Money tends to make you more of what you already are. Money tends to exaggerate your existing traits. People think money changes them. So I always wanted to be wealthy when I was young. And then when I had a chance to become wealthy, I thought, well, I'm going to study money really hard. I read every single book I could on money. I kind of got like many degrees worth of education on money, but not in university form.
Yeah.
So I think it's really one of my personal missions in life is to get the conversation of money out there way more. And free people to have a love affair
with money. You've got a book called Money, which I need to consume next. Yeah,
that's but a big one.
What's so interesting is when you got the million, because that had been, having been 50 grand in debt, I can see how it would be, I'm gonna get a million, and you didn't get it quite by the 30th you wanted.
No, I was a bit annoyed.
Slightly after. Yeah. Still
that's why
got
I say
it.
Between age 30 and 31.
Let's not nitpick.
I wanted by 30. Yeah. I mean, no one cares now.
But what's amazing is what happened inside you when you got that million? Nothing, did it?
Well, no, because all you do is I want 5.
Yeah.
And then when you get to 5, I want 10. Then when you get to 10, so no, nothing happened, but really. You think you're going to come a day.
Oh, my word.
And you're going to be like, whoa!
Yeah.
But no, it wasn't really like that.
But it's what's one of the things in Life Leverage, which at the start of it, talking about fulfillment and people being fulfilled in the now. Mm. And that money thing kind of ties into that, because it's a bit like I wanted to present Blue Peter from the age of 5. Mm. And when I realized that dream at the age of 26, I had always been the shy girl, absolutely terrified, but that was the thing I wanted to do. Like, my purpose was bigger than my fear.
Yeah.
And when I landed it, I thought overnight, I'm going to be confident. Yeah. I'm going to be gregarious. And I was still the terrified little girl. Mm. I had to take night nurse for the first 6 months of doing live shows because I couldn't sleep the night before. But my point being, I sort of wanted to say to every person retiring, everyone on their deathbed, that thing you always wanted to do that you thought would have changed you, you would have been the same person, mm, just with a different scenario. Yeah. Like you getting your first meal.
Yeah. Someone sent me a quote. It would have been from an ancient guru. Happiness is never somewhere else. And we're all looking somewhere else for happiness. Yeah. Another partner, another person, another business, another book, another million, another country.
Yeah.
Happiness is never somewhere else.
Love so that.
And I love that. Yeah. And that teaches me a lot. And the older I get, I like the simple quotes as much as the complicated ones. Yeah. So by all means, have your goals. But happiness is not in the attainment of your goal. I know it's now going to come out with a cliche, but it's in the moments moving towards it. Because
it's the journey.
It is. Because nostalgia is looking back and going, oh, I remember when that was so great then.
Yeah.
But when you were there, you were wishing were 5 years further forward.
Yeah.
So yeah, just be careful of that. That's why getting to a million didn't matter.
Yeah.
And when I got there, it wasn't the whoa.
Like, having goals is incredible for moving you forward in life.
It
doesn't change who you are fundamentally.
What goals are, and this is something else my mentor taught me, goals are not a new upside of your life. Mm. Goals are just a different place.
Yeah.
So when you set a goal, you normally go, oh, I'm going to make this money and I'm going to be here. And you do your visualization and your vision boards. And whenever anyone sets goals, it's all positive stuff. What a goal is just another place.
Yeah.
So a goal is just a new set of positives.
Yeah.
And a new set of negatives.
I call it.
That's what it is.
I call it a dream with its work boots on.
There you go.
Because it's literally, there's no point having the dream if you're not going to put the strategies in place to get there.
Yeah. So you wanted me to talk about the life leverage. See, I'm not forgetting the question.
You're really good. It's like you're in Australia, just slightly on a delay.
Yes, it is.
I love it.
So the life leverage philosophy is getting more done in less time. It's learning to outsource and leverage. It's learning to think, who can I get to do it, rather than how can I do it.
It's not working harder, just to let my listeners know that.
It's working smart
and clever,
not hard.
Yeah.
And people challenge me on this a lot, because I think certainly our parents and our parents' parents, it was graft. Mm. And in America, a lot of the influencers talking about hustle and grind.
And all the overtime.
Yeah, and they wear like a badge of honor.
I'm so busy.
I'm so busy.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And, the 100-hour weeks and all of that. But in reality, if you think smart and you have a team of people around you and you use systems and apps and software and you think in terms of leverage, you can do in a day what you could have done in a week, or you can do in a day what other people might take 2 weeks to do.
Mm.
It's a thought process as well as strategies and tactics. So getting more done in less time. And the biggest thing that stops that is, one, the pride and the bravado of wearing the badge of honor of hard work,
I'm
the identity
everything.
Of yeah. being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Two, the fear of letting go. So, I mean, throughout both my books, Life Leverage and Start Now, Get Perfect Later, there's constant references to You have to let go to grow.
Yeah.
And the fear of letting go is, if I ask someone to do that task, they won't do it very well, or I'll have to go in and do it, or they might steal my intellectual property, or, you know, they might set up in competition against me, blah, blah, blah. And, well, if those things were a reality, no company would go bigger than the size of one. How can a company have thousands of employees? Someone somewhere let go.
Yeah.
I've been on this little charm offensive of interviewing billionaires. I'm interviewing my third in 6 days on Monday. And when you listen to billionaires, they really get the art of leverage. And no billionaire I've ever met is grafting and grinding. Mm. I'm not saying they haven't worked hard, and I'm not saying to start their career they didn't work hard, but they've figured out, and it's not just because they're a billionaire, but they've figured out thinking time, partnerships, having time to sit and breathe on things. Warren Buffett recently said that, you know, he likes to read and think. And so many people are out there are being really busy, but he believes to make really good non-emotional decisions, you need to take time reading and thinking.
Yeah, so, and investing in you.
Yeah, and having good conversations with interesting people and trying to solve meaningful problems and doing the right job. Now, I call this active procrastination is doing the wrong job well.
Yeah.
And so many entrepreneurs are doing admin and they're doing the wrong job.
Yeah.
Well, what's the point in doing the wrong job?
You can be a busy fool. Yeah. Like, one of the things that I love most in this book is how you talk about dropping the low income generating tasks and low key results areas. And we are all guilty of that. Like, you can wake up on a morning and go, I need to do this hard thing. I need to eat the frog. But I am instead going to go and tidy that cupboard over there. Now you can fill your day with crazy busyness, but have you ticked off any of the things that are going to move you or your company forward? Yeah. No.
Yeah. So key result areas, income generating tasks. I wrote a book called Routine Equals Results, and I added in, because I didn't have these in Life Leverage, key life areas.
Right.
Because when I was writing Life Leverage, it was all about essentially extracting yourself out of your company and making yourself redundant so that your company could grow, because you're the person that holds it back.
This is if you're an entrepreneur.
Yes,
not
exactly.
If you're working for a company, don't be doing that.
No, no, of course. Although
just
a guy did,
myself.
I wrote a
Please
story
tell
about,
the story yeah. of Bob in yeah. the beginning. It's like I, as a grade A,
yeah.
very well-behaved student, out loud, audibly gasped at this story.
Yeah, so it was, a few years ago, a chap was in the news, let's call him Bob, because he outsourced his entire job, but within his job.
Yeah.
So everything that he had to do in his job as an employee, he got an outsource to someone on Fiverr.com or Upwork or whatever to do it.
Yeah.
And he didn't do his job because he outsourced his job. And he got found out and he got fired. And I just thought, well, if my son did that, I'd actually champion that and almost celebrate that, because he was just thinking smart.
Well,
why does it matter to the employer? Surely the employer should have given that person a pay rise, should have given that person a managerial role, should have got that person involved in strategy, creativity, innovation. Instead, he got fired.
But I love that he only got found out because they were looking at his online habits and stuff, and they're like, hang on, why has he played all these games?
Yeah.
And he was getting a company in China to do his job for 20 grand, and he was pocketing the other 80.
Yeah.
I mean, clever guy.
Yeah, yeah, leverage.
But it made me go.
The school system and our parents and media teaches us that that's cheating.
Yeah, well, it is.
It's not.
It kind of
would
not. Be.
It's not cheating. All right, I'd have to look at his employment contract, so I couldn't say for sure. But for me,
it's
thinking
clever.
Smart.
Yeah, it's very clever. But I think one of the stories I love about your childhood, and it resonated so much with my school upbringing, where they couldn't cope with it when I said I wanted to present Blue Peter. It was like, no, but what do you really want to do? Your story of your geography is so sums up a lot of school systems and a lot of the normal way of doing things. Mm. Do you want to tell the geography story? Sorry to all Rob's followers who know this. We will not conduct the rest of the interview in French. Although, peut-être.
La banque. Okay. So because of fear of not fitting in and wanting to be recognised by my peers at school, I worked hard at GCSE. Mm. And a year before our exams, I got moved up into the top set.
Yes, you did, sir.
I did in geography and in French. Mm. And in their infinite wisdom at our school, and I was 15, so this is 16 years ago, whatever, a long time ago. No, 26 years ago.
You didn't do mathematique then?
No, I didn't. I got no comeback on that.
It was at school.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
all we need
Who
to know.
Who cares about what? How long ago it was? No, actually, maths was. I got the B in maths.
I don't even think the word is mathematics.
The A in every. No, it's not. But it's a good comeback.
That's good, right?
Yeah. A long fucking time ago. So they moved 20 of us up into the top set into this new experimental subject.
So you thought you were flying at this point?
Well, like, yeah. Look at me. Check me out. I'm one of the top 20 in our year. And the subject was called géographie, with an acute accent above the E at the end. Géographie, where we were to do geography and French together, combined, and we would learn geography in French.
And you learnt neither.
And I learnt neither very well, yeah. But what, I mean, it didn't floor me for about another 15 years. But when I'd made a decent amount of money, I'd learned about economics and how money works and, how to create value and how to build a company and made my first million. I thought, they never taught me about money management. They never taught me about budgeting. I mean, these weren't even in economics.
Yeah.
They never taught me about money emotions, because our emotions are around money, envy and retail therapy and all these emotions. They never taught me any of that, but they taught me geography and French. And it just seemed such a ridiculous, ironic paradox that all the things you really need in life, like we got taught religious studies. Yeah. I'm not averse to any religion. You never hear me talk about religion because I respect your religion. But religious studies was reciting the parable of the sower and the parable of this and the parable of that. And we got a little book with all the parables in it. And if you could recite the stories, I got something like 96% GCSE religious studies because I could recite the parable of the sower, etc. But that you can't use that in your life.
Yeah.
You can't use French geography.
Do
in
you
your life.
Think there was any seed of an element in French geography that might have sown a little seed in your head of that's life done a bit differently? That's a little bit disruptive, because that was actually probably your first disruptive experience without even realizing who thought of that idea?
I think my first disruptive experience was working in a pub age 6.
Oh yeah, true.
And my dad did that was smart is he'd get, so he knew quite a lot of famous jockeys because we had pubs in Newmarket, and he would select a famous jockey or someone in the pub who was really well respected or whatever, and he'd introduce me to him, and he'd be like, look, this is your uncle or your godfather, whatever.
Oh, everyone and was uncle and aunt.
I know they were.
So weird.
But it was smart. It was smart, because I think my dad realised, one, he's busy.
Yeah.
And two, I'm going to look up to, this jockey with this Porsche.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more than my dad, because your dad's your dad.
And boys do need a role model.
They do.
Like
they need more than one father figure, I think. And you know what it's like as a parent. You have this vision, I'm going to raise my children a certain way, I'm going to tell them what to do and share my life works, and you tell them what to do and they ignore you.
Yeah. Surely
so,
not.
So at age 8, he got a guy called Harry Osborne in the pub to teach me pool. I've won loads of money playing pool, and I was winning money at 8 and 9 years old at playing pool.
Wow.
So that was probably quite disruptive. I think my dad is very disruptive.
Yeah.
He's a rebellious person. Whatever anyone wants him to do the opposite. Completely unemployable, as am I. So I would say I was already pretty disruptive before then.
So it wasn't to do with geography.
You can be disruptive and create good chaos, or you can be disruptive and do something ridiculous like put French and geography together. but like surely here's something, this is really important to say. So nowhere before the age of 25, nowhere in my life did anyone sit me down, whether it was a tutor, a teacher, a mentor, and say, hey, look, there's no rush, son, but you should think about who you are and what you want to do with your life. No one.
Yeah.
And I didn't ask myself once before the age of 25 years and 11 months, who am I and what do I want to do with my life?
Yeah.
And then one of my mentors, probably a decade ago said, every day you should ask yourself, who am I? What is my genius? And what do I want to do with my life? And a lot of people are floating,
yeah,
and they want to do something else, and
well,
they don't know what.
Well, I think you either live life or it lives
yes.
you. Like, literally, you have to grab it and go, this is what I'm doing, this is what I want.
Now, a lot of people look at others and go, oh, it's all right for you because you always wanted to be a Blue Peter presenter. It's all right for Rob because, you know, he had the thing up with his dad and he wanted to be an entrepreneur. But no, you and I know we had to ask ourselves many times over many years, and we had to try a lot of things, and we had to experience a lot of rejection and failure.
Yeah.
So I think the best... I'm not really a giver of advice. I just share what I've experienced. But I think the greatest experience in my life, negative and positive, is if you ask yourself every day, who am I and what am I supposed to do with my life? What's my unique genius? You're either going to find it one day or you're going to test a few things, and then one day you're going to land on it. And that's going to be the greatest gift you can give to yourself. And if you give that gift to your children by getting them to ask that, And no one teaches you that. No one teaches you that at school. Show me a lesson that teaches you that.
I'm fascinated by your parenting.
You know when they give you lines at school? You know,
I got lines
all the time. Calling teachers motherfuckers and all this kind of thing. I've got lines. But imagine if when they gave you lines, they got you to write, who am I? Who am I? What am I meant to do with my life? What am I meant to do with my life?
Oh my word, that would be amazing.
What is my legacy? I mean, imagine that. But where's the creative thinking?
Amazing. Now, so I coach now, and my kids find it hilarious because I can't pull the wool anymore because they know what I do for a living. And so I'll try and sidle something in and they're like, oh, life lessons, mummy.
Yeah.
That's literally, they roll their eyes at me.
Yeah.
But I love your approach to parenting with your kids, which I find disruptive, obviously, because it would be. Your son, Bobby, and his golf. Tell us the story about that.
So...
Because I think there's a lot of things that we collectively can learn from your parenting and your business brain of how we should be managing kids, what we can teach them now. Like, I find that fascinating.
So, I've never, ever said I'm a parent that anyone should model. I just want to make that clear. I think that parenting is hard. I'd say writing books and parenting are two of the hardest things I've done. Writing books is a big labor of love. I mean, parenting's the hardest probably, and the most rewarding, of course. Generally, I think as parents, we tend to parent our children with what we wanted but lacked.
Yeah.
And some people say that that's a bad thing. Oh, you're living vicariously through your kids. I think as long as you're not extreme, there's nothing wrong with that. Because we're essentially trying to pass on our values to our children.
Yeah.
And I think most parents want to raise their children.
I was going to say, there's nothing wrong with that,
no.
As long as it's serving them.
Exactly. As long as it's not just all about you. And I've had times in my life where it's been a bit too much about me, and thankfully I've backed off.
Surely not.
Can I answer the question, please, Katie?
Well, please do.
I'm trying to do this seriously. My mum and dad let me pretty much do what I want. They had to because we pretty much raised ourselves in our pubs. They were downstairs a lot when we were upstairs a lot. So they had to have a very loose, independent parenting style, which, by the way, I loved. And so my sister and I, very independent from a very young age. But because of that, my dad and mum would always say, oh, do what you want. And they never really sat me down and went, do you know what, son, you could be a professional golfer. You could be a professional cricketer. You're actually really good at this. You know, maybe you should pursue this as a career. And then when I was struggling with it or didn't want to do it or was going to give it up, they didn't sit me down and encourage me. No, I'm not saying they didn't encourage me, but basically they let me do what I want.
Yeah.
So I played county cricket. I played county level golf. I was single figure handicapper when I was 13. I was the only person in the school year to get 100% at art. And there were various things I could do well, but nothing I was great at.
Yeah.
And what I discovered being an entrepreneur and, you know, achieving what I've achieved is that the world doesn't reward you for being quite good at a lot of things normally. I mean, there are some instances, but mostly not. It inadvertently and inversely rewards, unfairly rewards greatness.
Yeah.
So like if you look at what the world number one golfer earns compared to the world number two, it's a lot more. But if you look at world compared to number 10, it's crazy more.
Yeah.
And the world number 100 will probably barely make a living or 1,000.
It might actually be me. I'm not sure.
What might be you, that golfer?
Number 100 on
golf. Oh, right. Really?
No.
Okay. I'm not playing against you. So the point is, unless you're the very best, get all the best sponsorship deals, they get all the recognition, they make a lot more of the money, and it's almost unfairly weighted.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, just imagine if I'd have been a professional cricketer. Like the 2005 Ashes, all the guys got Queen's Awards, didn't they? And I thought, I want to give my kids the very best chance to be great at something and not just good at whatever. And I think in our generation now, there's quite a lot of liberal parenting because we're against the autocratic, you know, rule with the iron fist parenting. Maybe that our parents or parents,
we've gone
the other way.
I can hear a wooden spoon.
Yes.
Not having that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, well, it's not about the winning. It's about taking part. I'm not sure about that. Yeah. Oh, it's not about, you know, being great at something. It's about being happy. I'm not sure about that. I think we need to be careful with either extremes.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, I want to give my children the chance to be great at something. So I got Bobby into golf really, really young, and it was driven by me.
He was doing tournaments at like some crazy age.
Yeah, he played in the World Under Sixes when he was five. He was the youngest player, played in the European Championships, the British Championships, played kind of 2 years in a row. I wrote that book and then traveled the world with him for a couple of years doing all that. Wow. And to be honest, I loved it. And it was equally challenging as it was rewarding. And yeah, I gave him the very best chance I could. I know I couldn't have done anything anymore and I'd have pushed him too hard.
And you must have seen that he had a natural desire to do it. Like you wouldn't go, oh, golf would be a great idea. And then he has either no affinity for it or no interest in it.
No.
As a parent, you wouldn't do that.
No, he took to it well.
Yeah.
And he enjoyed it. I mean, it was challenging too, because nothing, you know, it's a myth. Oh, well, you know, just let them do what they love. No, there's challenge in everything. And anything you want to be good at, there's difficulty. So I didn't want to hide him from the challenging part. So sometimes I'd take him to a tournament when he wouldn't really want to go. And sometimes I'd be the driver. But with my son, what we worked out is he was quite shy and reserved, and he didn't like all the attention and all the people. So we backed him off from competitions at about age seven. For the good of letting him develop as a person.
Yeah.
And it
without
was
all that pressure.
Exactly. And it was the right thing. And
you know,
a pro once said to me, do you want him to be the best in the world at 7, 17 or 27? And if I'd have picked any one of those, I'd take 27.
Yeah.
Even though he kind of pretty much was at 7 or 6.
Yeah.
So now he plays 3 times a week with his coach. He really loves it, but he hasn't played a competition for about 18 months. But he's played loads of competitions. He's had all the experience. He's got it in the locker. Like, he hadn't played for 4 months. I played a few holes with him a few weeks ago. He stood on the first, pulled a driver out and smashed the ball to 10 foot. And he hadn't played for 4 months. Now, I couldn't put a driver to 10 foot.
Yeah.
You know, you know, from the equivalent of me, that's a 270-yard drive, putting it to 10 foot.
Yeah. So but I love as well, in because I think it is in life leverage, the analogy that you use for people in business and in life not giving equal time to equal elements of their business.
Yeah.
And there's a golf analogy that you use of
more time putting,
yeah,
because that's where you play most of your shots.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And I like that.
That's, yeah. Yeah, know, because we tend to divide our time equally between things, but no two tasks have the same value.
Yeah.
One task will be worth 500 quid to you. One task will be worth 5 quid to you.
Yeah.
So nothing in life is equal. So if you have a to-do list and you equalize tasks and you make a non-important or a non-income generating task as important as an income generating task, you're ultimately going to be putting your focus in the wrong areas. Just like if you take all 14 clubs in a golf bag and you practice them all 1/14th of the time, well, actually you should be putting much more.
Totally.
Because that's where you win the game.
Just while we're on parenting, before I move on, for parents listening, because your business brain is obviously quite brilliant, what things do you think parents could be doing with their kids from a young age, business-wise, to, you know, no one's ever taught me about budgeting. I still don't know. I still don't budget. Like, I don't know how to budget. Like, there's so much that people don't know that you can instill in kids. A lot of what you have probably came from your dad and the pub and seeing a business running. What kind of tangible things can people do with their children?
I think get them involved in what you do as early as you can. So if you're in property investing, take them on viewings with you.
Yeah.
If they're in the car, sometimes have an audio book or a podcast on. Obviously, sometimes have a discussion as well, but balance that out. I got Bobby counting with golf balls really early, and I would give him rewards on the golf course of £1 and then £5 and then £10. And then for a hole in one, it's a Kruger round. Most people don't know what one of those is. It's a gold coin that's worth give or take about £1,000. He got 8 hole in one, so it cost me £8,000. Yeah. All by age 7.
Wow.
But he was going to school at 4 years old, teaching his friends about Krugerrands, and the teachers didn't even know what a Krugerrand was.
I didn't know till today.
Well, there you
Thank you.
Yeah. So teaching them about money by getting it, putting money and reward and counting into the thing they love to do.
Yeah.
Now, I believe that the single most empowering and strategy that works the best for influencing anyone, children, staff, friends, is to find out what their values are,
yeah,
and then sell what you want them to do based on their values.
Right.
So if kids love computer games, then, you know, chores in the house are done and the reward is playing on the computer. Or, you know, if they help you, if they get their homework done, then you'll let them set up a YouTube channel and help them with, you know, becoming a YouTuber, which a lot of kids want to do.
Yeah.
So when you link what you want them to do with what's most important to them, the script to do that is in Life Leverage, then generally you have more empowered, more inspired people doing what you want them to do, but feeling like they're doing it for themselves.
Yeah. Our kids wanted a rabbit this week, and they had to do a full PowerPoint presentation of why it was important that they got a rabbit.
Oh, really? Nice.
Amazing. Literally, they're getting a rabbit based on their PowerPoint presentation, because they thought it all through. They researched what they needed, the amount it was going to cost for the injections.
So you're teaching them and selling and presenting and speaking, and they don't even know it. That's inspired, that is.
Okay, so, well done me.
Yeah, exactly. But anything you can do which links what they want or what they love to do, and you can put those entrepreneurial or life skills within it.
Yes.
Because if you sit them down at 7 years old and say, I want to teach you about public speaking, so they're obviously, shut up, daddy.
Yeah. You know, we make them do that every week. They have to stand up and deliver a 5-minute talk about anything in front of the family. This is a lockdown thing that we've done.
Okay.
Purely because we could see people standing there going, I've been in business meetings and people can't even speak around a board table.
Yeah.
So, right. So we've done parenting. Amazing. Right,
let me just add one more thing.
Go on.
So with Bobby, I gave him the gift of golf because I did a lot of research into thinking what would be working for him. You know, most money, travel, tend to be well-rounded individuals. But also I was a failed golfer, so there's a bit of that vicarious in there. And hey, look, that story hasn't finished. He's 9 years old and we'll see. We're allowing him to pursue his own interests. He's good at drums. He likes football. So we'll see where that goes. But he's always got that in the locker. With Ariana, I've taken a different approach because I think your children are different. And I don't think you necessarily take the same approach. So with Ariana, we're watching her and to see, oh, where does she seem to flourish? And then we'll give her some resources.
Yeah, amazing.
So she says, hey, daddy, look at my sophisticated look. And she'll put on some glasses and she'll go, and she'll, and like 5 years
the
old,
duck face.
5 years old, and she'll she can do it really well.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's ridiculous, daddy. And, and she's got all these words, and she's a 5. So we're going to get her, got her into dancing, gymnastics,
Brilliant.
Acting and singing. And we're just going to let her go and see how she goes. And maybe one of them she'll.
Maybe so stage thing.
Anywhere she shows some flair,
that's what I love
we're
that.
Going to give her the chance. Now, I think you've got to be careful.
Yeah.
Too much freedom. And I think that, you know, maybe they don't get good at something. Too much pressure and they can rebel and not want to do it because it's coming from the parents. But, you know, don't want anyone to think I've got this made. I'm a student of parenting as much.
No, but
as
I find your approach fascinating because it's, again, disruptive compared to what I would do.
And I guess I'm really thinking as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And so if people want entrepreneurial kids,
but
you know, if they don't, fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. I want to just touch on quickly because we almost out of time, but I want to just touch on your habits daily for what I describe as limitless living, because I consume your videos online, like your outdoor gym. Amazing. Everyone wants to get on those tires and do the ropes and all the. What are the things that you that are non-negotiable daily that you need to do in the morning to set your day up for success?
Okay. So some of these shouldn't be copied and some of them should.
Yeah.
Medium skinny cappuccino, extra shot. Absolutely have to have that at 5:30 a.m.
Amazing.
And 10:30 a.m. That is my, have you seen the film Limitless?
No. So hang on, remind me what it is.
It's about a special drug that makes you are like a super genius.
That's what I'm on.
Well, there you go. That's what you're on. That's what your podcast concept
is. I haven't seen it, though.
So, yeah.
I'm
so the film Limitless,
10,
is like, so it does have downsides, of course. But for me, coffee is my super drug. And yeah, I have a very addictive personality, so it keeps me safe from not being addicted to other things.
Yeah.
So for me, that
is... So two coffees in the morning, early doors.
Well, yeah, 1:30, 1:10:30.
Yeah.
That's it. Gratitude.
Yeah.
I think gratitude is vital. You know, what you appreciate appreciates, and where focus goes, energy flows and results show. So these are probably Zig Ziglar, Jim Rohn quotes.
Yeah.
And that's true. And I found in my life, when I become more insular, more selfish, and I think about what's going wrong, not what's going right, I tend to attract more of that. Whereas when I'm grateful. So I try and think every day about, there's a great app, and I think it's called Grateful. And you can basically go in every day and write what you're grateful for, and you could go back, over and look at what you're grateful for. So I think gratitude is really important.
Did you find, just as a side note, did you find gratitude increased during lockdown in areas you hadn't appreciated for a very long time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I said before that there is no all upside or all downside. Everything has equal upside and downside, and a new situation isn't better or worse. It's just different and it changes. Well, long walks I did in lockdown.
Yeah.
I spoke to people way more, sent them way more voice memos, in touch with peers and friends. I forged more partnerships. We created more online courses. So, yeah, there were definite upsides.
Like, do you think lockdown made you go deeper? Because I saw a video you did about love, which I just thought was brilliant. Just basically saying, if you love people, tell them, because we don't say it enough.
No.
Is that a video that you think you would have done prior to lockdown, or was it kind of, has lockdown made it all a bit more raw and open?
Yeah, I think for me, I get more in tune with gratitude, well, emotion, actually sadness as well. I think sadness is quite a powerful emotion. I tend to get more in touch with those emotions when I've got extreme challenges. So definitely the lockdown created more connection with people.
Yeah.
I was doing a lot of videos and they were getting 3 or 4 times the reach, and I was getting a massive amount of increased gratitude from my followers and fans and subscribers, and I was simultaneously feeling that back to them.
Yeah.
And it created this virtuous cycle. Of course, there was a lot more criticism and trolling as well, because you can't have one without the other.
You're more out there.
So yeah, I definitely did feel a deeper sense of that, and I want to sort of like bask and bathe in that for as long as possible.
Yeah.
I don't want life to go back to normal where you're just like,
and
you know, pissed off with everyone, and you're rushing and you're stressed, because you can easily get into that.
So, it just felt that particular video just really stood out to me as just like so raw and authentic and real, and like saying it how it is. Because I think in lockdown, I think in 2020, a lot of us have, you just kind of work out what's important, don't you? And it slows life down and you go, okay, this is what matters.
I mean, if you think about it, like if you message someone and went, hey, I've just made £15 million, they wouldn't care.
Mm.
But if you sang them happy birthday on a voice memo, or wished them happy 15th wedding anniversary, or congratulated them on the birth of their child, I reckon they'd be really happy.
Yeah.
And so with entrepreneurs, you know, we can get very hung up on accolades, awards, landmarks, you know, accreditations, and achievements.
You're doing all right, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Just to let you
but
know.
I can always compare myself to someone who's done more.
Of course you can, yeah.
And, you know, that is part of the entrepreneurial journey. But I've focused way less on that in the last few years, and definitely in the lockdown.
Mm.
And those, look, I'm not going to blow my own trumpet here. Well, I just think I've been there for people more in the lockdown than maybe I was before. Maybe that's one of the gifts of the lockdown, and doing quirky little things. I've become really good friends with Jake Wood, who is Max Branning on EastEnders. Jake is awesome. I love Jake. And, you know, we just send each other these random little I love you messages or whatever.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just, that's what life's about.
And friendship.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just and connection.
Yes.
Yeah.
And honestly, entrepreneurship, I did get sucked in where I probably let some friendships drift too far away or didn't focus on them enough. And that's on me.
Yeah.
And so I've definitely made a bigger effort.
Yeah.
when you die, no one's going to give a fuck how much money you made. Yeah. No one is. But the impact you made on their life, I probably had a dozen people in the lockdown of my clients or people who reached out who were suicidal because it was hard.
Oh my gosh, I can't imagine if you had a big business.
Yeah, or if you're a single mum with two kids and you've got no other income stream and that's gone and you're homeschooling and they're both under 3 years
and
old.
There's the also concern about their mental health. Like it wasn't for me, it was just homeschooling.
And they have to quarantine, so they're on their own for 3 months and they haven't got any grandparents who can babysit.
Yeah.
And you know, anyone and everyone of a different type, if you could think of, I probably spoke to. And when people message you saying, Rob, I was at a really low point and talking to you really helped, I'll remember that forever. And people care way more about that than, another accolade you got.
But it's so true. Like, impact and being needed are so huge in life, like, which leads me.
This is why I love all my content that I do. This is why I'll happily do 3 videos a day.
Yeah.
Actually, with all of our repurposing, I'll do 20 or 30 pieces of content a day.
Okay, so this is the next question.
Yeah,
legacy. Yeah. What is the Rob Moore Disruptive Entrepreneur legacy? What are people going to say about you when you're not here, and what are you leaving, hopefully?
So, again, my personal vision is to help as many people on this planet start and scale their business and get a better financial education. My foundation, the Rob Moore Foundation, which I set up when I was, I think, 37, something like that, aims to help especially younger and underprivileged people start and scale their business and get a better financial education. So when it's my time, hopefully there's millions of people on the planet that started their business or scaled their business or got themselves out of debt or made money or became a philanthropist or a disruptive entrepreneur themselves and took some risks and did something meaningful, created a meaningful product and service. That's my legacy. Now, I've just been invited to speak for the Prince's Trust. There's 1,000 ways I can leave that legacy. I can have a podcast. I can, through my foundation, I can give grants and we can do charity raises. I did quite a lot of that through the lockdown. But specifically, and I've thought about this a lot because I think it's important, specifically, because people say this a lot, and I want them to keep saying this, what people often say about me is, I first stumbled upon this guy, Rob Moore, and I wasn't sure. And by that, they mean they weren't sure about his style, that he's a bit in your face. He's a bit, I don't know, gobby. Some people think a bit raw, a bit whatever.
Yeah.
But after a while, I got it under their skin and in their head. And actually, he's got substance and he's really helped me. Because I think that's what being disruptive is.
Well, and I think you're so... I mean, your passion is tangible, and I think your authenticity just like comes through, permeates like everything you do. Because I think when you first see you, it's like you're so enthusiastic. Like I'm actually quite enthusiastic, but it's like
you're very
enthusiastic. I remember the first time we met, you were like, "Whoa!"
Yeah,
and that was through a screen.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like you're the passion and what you do with what you do is it's just so. Perfectly you. Like, talk about people living out their purpose. It's amazing watching it. So I love observing it as an observer. If you had a billboard and you could write one message and everybody in the world was going to see it, what would be the sentence that you would write on there?
Okay, so I'm going to take two, if you don't
That's
mind.
That's quite greedy because you're always trying to up it, aren't you?
Or you
always
could,
elevating.
Yeah, or maybe
always leveraging.
Or giving more value.
Oh, there we are.
Look at it that way.
There we go.
Yeah.
You're allowed that one.
So, I'm probably most known for these two anyway.
Okay.
So one would be start now, get perfect later.
Like
the title of my book.
Yeah.
Because I think so many of us are so scared to try things. But in the end, we all know when we've tried something we've been scared of, actually how good it's felt. And I think if you have that attitude, now you're going to get better. But if you have that attitude, you will do more things in life that ultimately will give you great memories. So that'd be one.
Yeah.
And then the other one's linked to it. Which is my sign off on every single episode.
We know it.
And
we know it.
Which is, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything. Again, because I think there's so many things we all want to do with our life.
Yeah.
And we don't take the risk because we have the veiled illusion of security.
Well, we're security just, we're, is a paradox. It's fear.
Yeah, of course.
Fear
it
is what stops
fear
so
of being
much.
Judged, fear oh of being rejected, fear of being ridiculed, fear of failure, fear yeah. of making mistakes, fear of, you know, losing, and all of these are such an illusion.
And I think also an illusion, while we're on that, is I often have people say to me, oh, it's all right for you standing on a stage doing your limitless talk because you're all right doing that. No, I'm not. I literally don't sleep the night before. I'm terrified before I walk on stage. I'm sure your adrenaline's going when you do one of your keynote talks.
Yeah.
But the point is, you just get used to A, doing it scared, and B, you have tools and techniques in place to get you through yeah. that process. But it doesn't mean that you're any different than anybody else. You just are used to stepping into a fearful place.
100%. I just watched a brilliant piece on Sky Sports. I love all sports and cricket
yeah.
and the rain of delayed play. And there's an absolutely brilliant piece from Mike Atherton and Nasser Hussain, and they were doing a mindset piece. And Alistair Cook scored more runs than anybody else in our country ever. And he said he was nervous before every single game. Nasser Hussain, one of our best captains, turned England around from being the worst side in the world, said he felt like it was an exam you're going into
wow.
at the start of every game. Mark Ramprakash, who had like the most talent ever and actually didn't have as great a career as he could have had, said in the end, nerves just got the better of him and he just couldn't. Like wow. the best, most successful people in the world, they don't have an absence of fear.
Yeah.
They embrace their fear.
Yeah.
They feel the fear and do it anyway, as yeah. is that famous, I think it was Susan Jeffers who wrote that book.
Yeah.
And they face it and they breathe it in and they realize that that is part of their humanity. And I'm very nervous before talks often. And when I go and do something that's different for me, like I'm going to go and do this talk at the Prince's Trust to a yeah. load of young entrepreneurs, and I'm going to be a bit nervous because, you know, the Prince's Trust. Well, I've never spoken at such an establishment before. I'm normally in different kind of arenas and I can be risky and shouty.
But that's the point, though. At the Prince's Trust, you need to be all
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, true. And exactly. By the way, whenever I dilute myself or try and change my style to fit what
Hello.
I perceive, yeah, yeah, it never works.
I remember as a kid, my dad taking me to Harrods. Yeah. You know, it used to be like a big fun day out, yeah. right? And we're not a fancy family. My dad's a vicar and we're just a normal family. We had no money growing up, but we'd go to Harrods and it was properly exciting. And I remember my dad in Harrods going, excuse me, could you tell me where the ladies' washroom is? Because I needed a wee. Yeah. And it was like, oh, who are you? Yeah. Who suddenly stepped in? But that is the point. You always have to show up, no matter what, as your authentic self, because that is what people adore. Finally, this is the last question. Stick with us, kids. There's a podcast that I listen to, and in it, the guy at the end always asks people what the word of his podcast means to them.
Yeah.
So what does the word limitless for my podcast mean to you?
I think that limitless is about finding your own true, unique talents and genius and finding that purpose for your life and then going all out and living your life in that along that unique path to you. And what I mean by that is I believe everybody has their own unique set of values, therefore genius and talents. It's all in different forms. And in that pursuit, there probably are no limits on what you could potentially achieve. But if we compare ourselves to other people, if I compare my broadcasting career to you, I'm always going to fall short. If you compare your authoring career to me, you know, you've got some catching up to do. So when we compare ourselves to others, we dishonor our own talents and genius. Mm. But when we take time to discover what our own unique talents and genius are, that's where our life becomes limitless. So obviously you've asked me on the hop, and that's a really good question, but it's a bit wordy. I could soundbite it if I was given more time, but it'd be something along those lines.
I'm not giving you more time.
No.
Rob Moore, it has been
thank you.
So delicious.
Should we go and have some lunch?
Talk to you all day long. That's why I had to stick with this. Oh, final quick thing. Gemma, your gorgeous lady Gemma.
Yeah.
You always reference her as the love of my life.
Yeah.
What's that?
What is that?
Well, yeah. Is that an affirmation? Is that every single time you say her name, that comes after it? And this may get cut out, but I'm just
no need to cut out.
I just noticed it and I was like, I wonder if that's a thing, like that he always has, every time I say Gemma's name, this is what I'm saying.
Someone once said to me, and actually they were being critical of me, but it was interesting what they said. They said that your wife is the best part of you. And they were sort of criticizing me, and that pissed me off at first. Mm. But actually, when I think about it, I think there's a lot of truth in that. So she doesn't want to ever be public. She doesn't want to ever be on any videos or
love
podcasts or anything like that. And yeah, I think that ultimately, because where my life is going, there is only more of this coming. And, you know, I have had, you know, my brand and my name used really negatively, like most people. I mean, I'm not celebrity, but I've built up my own social media brand and following. But she's just, I guess, everything that I'm not. So she's calm, she's measured, she's thoughtful, she's patient, she's present. So I lucked out there.
It's amazing, because every time I read it in a book, it's like every woman would read that and go, that is what you want your other half to say.
Please don't put me up on a pedestal as being a perfect.
Don't worry.
I am an imperfect human being, and I've made mistakes.
You're just finding your way.
We all are, yeah. But yeah, I'm very fortunate. I've got some great people around me. And, you know, if we're mentioning my wife, we have to mention my MD, and we have to mention my business partner, and we have to mention my parents, because they're, I mean, our MD has been with us 10 years, just gone on Sunday.
And, is that Mark?
No, that's Catherine.
Right.
And she doesn't do any public, she doesn't want to either. I mean, to be honest, all those people I've just said, like putting Rob out in the front.
Go on, Rob.
I'm the puppet. I'm the, you know, I'm the trailblazers. And I take a lot of the flack. And a lot of the credit and praise too.
Yeah.
But they need to get so our MD is brilliant. And, you know, a lot of people would perceive that my MD supports me, but I support her. She's so good in her role. And my business partner, Mark, I mean, he's been with me every step of the way for 15 years. I've supported him in his challenges, and he has supported me in my challenges. And I am more chaotic and disruptive than him. So he's had to deal with far shit from me than I have had from him. And he just does it in a very professional, trusting, discreet way. And again, he's very different to me. And my parents have always stood by me when I've gone and done some crazy things.
They sound amazing.
You know, they
must be so proud. you know they are.
Yeah, well.
I'm news at tenning now. I've done that. I'm going to let you off the hook.
Thank you
so much for chatting.
All right. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
Bye. I am so excited to be on this podcast journey with you. Please be sure to subscribe and rate the podcast and share with anyone in your crew you think would love it. Thank you so much for joining the journey. For more on my story, you can follow me on social media at I'm Katie Hill. And to be the first in line for all the latest Limitless news, head to katiehill.com and hit subscribe. Limitless, the life you were born to live. Please be sure to hit subscribe and rate the podcast and share with anyone in your crew that you think would love it. I would love you to help me spread the word. For more on my story, you can follow me on social media at I'm Katie Hill. And to be the first in line for all the latest Limitless news, head to katiehill.com and hit subscribe. Limitless, the life you were born to live.